those docks along the northern edge, right where they used to, or where they anchor all the boats over there before the bridge. A lot of big sheephead I've caught there over the years.
Yeah.
What's your number one bait? If you're going to go to Lemon Bay or around Placida, because they're hitting off the trestle too, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, the Placida Pier has been really good.
Now, what's the number one bait?
It's still not gangbusters yet, but it's building at an alarming rate. Shrimp.
Alarming rate.
Well,
it's getting scary out there, folks. Hide your little selves.
Well, 2 weeks ago, you know, the air temperature gets cold and everyone gets excited and thinks the fish are going to happen. And it's all about water temperature, and it has to cool down for those fish to move in. It dropped 11 degrees in a week. Those fish did move in.
But it will take a week for that water temperature to drop. Once the air temp gets cold, it's literally 4 to 5 days before it reaches down even to 6 foot.
Right.
So your first foot will change fairly rapidly. Every foot down can take another 24 to 48 hours to change. Surface temp is quite different than down 4 to 6 foot.
Oh, yeah.
So the water's down. Sheephead are schooling up. They want to spawn. They all get together in big, massive schools to go spawning. Back to it. What's the top bait right now?
Shrimp. Shrimp definitely is by far the best bet.
Now, Eldred's has a good supply of fiddler crabs, which we don't have at Fish and Frank's right now. But if you're looking for a second alternative, Eldred's is out in Placida. It's the one on the right before you go to pay the toll to get onto Boca Grande. You don't have to pay the toll. It's before the toll. They're on the right. They do have a good supply of fiddler crabs there. I haven't gotten ours in yet, so
they've been hard to get. Even they've been having a hard time. They're getting them, but not with great consistency.
So shrimp or fiddler crabs. Now, what are the odds if you're going to go along the beach and look for sand fleas?
Only a few places I've been hearing about. Mostly like Inglewood area has been doing a little bit better with those.
Yeah.
The because of the. They're starting to pick up a little bit at Boca Grande because the beach got so pummeled
right.
by the hurricane.
The beach was just tore up. I mean, lost 30, 40 feet of beach in some areas.
Yeah. So they seem to be starting to move back in there in a little bit of numbers, but not great.
Sand fleas are really cool to use for bait. You get what we call a Florida snow shovel, which is a sand flea scoop, or you use them to gather shark's teeth. You go to the edge of the water on a natural beach, like anywhere from Gasparilla Island, Venice, Sarasota, all the Gulf beaches, but it can't be an inland beach. It's got to be a Gulf beach. And you dig that down into the sand, and it's got wire mesh in it. As you dig up a shovel scoop full of sand, you rinse it out, just dip it up and down the water, and all the sand will wash out through the mesh, and what's left in there is a combination of shells, shark's teeth, and you'll see some little creatures in there that are about as big as the end of your little finger from the first joint out, and they look like fleas. They look like giant fleas, and it's amazing how fast they can go through the sand. They live in the sand. They scurry right through it just the way we would, you know, go through water. I mean, it's spectacular to watch.
Yeah.
Great little bait. I put the hook in through the bottom and the back and bring it out out through the top, trying to stay as far back as I can. I don't want to go in the middle where I would kill them with that. But very hard shell little creature. Sheephead absolutely love them. It's an amazing bait to get. And you go out and catch it yourself. You can buy them frozen, but I don't know of any place that's ever sold live sand fleas.
Nope. I've never heard of them for sale.
Yeah. So people go out and they dig them up. There is a market. You can buy frozen sand fleas. I prefer the blanched ones. They're kind of brighter white.
They hold on better.
Yeah. They stay together better. So they're like $3.50 for a bag of sand fleas.
Yeah.
So, but sand fleas, live would be my number one sheephead bait. I would say fiddler crabs number two and shrimp number three. Or what do you think?
Honestly, I'm going to go with shrimp every time.
Shrimp number one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just because I mean, whether I'm fishing from a boat or from shore, I prefer to use the shrimp just because I can catch so many other things in addition to it.
So you're not counting it as the number one sheephead bait. You're counting it as a very good sheephead bait, but more because you can catch so many other things with it.
Yeah,
because
if the sheephead aren't cooperating that particular day, let's say it was super hot and the fish just turned off because sheephead like cooler water, I'm not stuck with a bunch of crabs that limit my species catch.
So the best thing, what you're saying, is get a couple dozen shrimp, get a little bit of feather crabs, get some sand fleas, take a couple of different baits with you so you're not stuck in one mode.
Right. But plus the other thing, the main reason why I do it is because so many people have it in their head that you can only catch sheep's head on crabs. They think you have to have fiddler crabs in order to catch sheep's head. And that's not true.
Well, you can actually use barnacles.
Yeah.
Barnacles are a great bait. RJ, have you ever used barnacles for bait?
No, I have not, though. I've heard a number of people that have used barnacles, yeah. The bigger ones. You got to break the outer shell open, and then you've got that inner shell on the inside, and they use those.
Well, there's a worm inside of there.
Yeah.
And it's the worm. The sheephead don't eat the actual crusty part of the barnacle, the hard part. They actually break that apart, spit out the hard stuff, and eat the worm inside, which brings me to another possibility. Earthworms.
Absolutely.
Regular freshwater earthworms are actually pretty darn good sheephead bait on the occasion.
Yeah.
Because they actually eat the worms inside of the barnacles. So,
well, not only that, but there's millions of types of saltwater worms that we just never see because most of them are nocturnal.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. There's bloodworms out there. There's sandworms. There's
bristle
all kinds
worms.
What is it?
Bristleworms and
fireworms. Okay.
Yeah. The bristleworms and fireworms will actually get up to like 3 feet long.
Wow.
And if you touch them, they'll light you on fire. That's why they call them that, because it's literally like, you ever brushed one of those green caterpillars in your like hibiscus bush or something and your arm lights on fire? That's what these will do. Plus, they have teeth.
Wow. I don't know. The whole thought of a 3-foot worm is kind of disgusting to begin with. I don't know.
Especially one that'll light you on fire. Yeah.
Yeah. One that has a poison, a burning skin, you know, and then it's 3-foot worm. I'm sorry. I'm going back to wigglers. I like nice little earthworms. I don't want to do that. But wigglers can be a good little bait to have with you.
Yeah.
But you do have to use a smaller hook. I prefer night crawlers over the wigglers because with the wigglers, if you put them on a regular hook, it breaks them in half.
Yeah.
It's too hard to keep them on the hook. So I'll take night crawlers and I'll break them into pieces and literally thread them over the hook, cover the hook up so they don't see the hook.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So it's a good alternative. I would have some shrimp. Now, if I'm fishing from the dock or pier, I like to peel the shell off the tail of the shrimp.
Yeah.
And I just sit there and I take a bag of frozen and I peel it, the shell, just like I would if I was going to eat it. I thread the hook in, starting at the very end of the tail, going towards the front so that I have the bulk of the soft meat by the point of the hook. If you start at the bigger end, by the time you get the point of the hook in, it's by the skinny part of the tail. It doesn't work as good. I want the meat and the point of the hook in the same spot. That way, when the fish bite the meat, they bite the point of the hook.
The other little trick that I like to do with that, once I peel the shrimp, I like to set them on the deck or on the railing of the dock for 5 minutes or so and let them dry out just a little bit. They become a little bit more rubbery. Don't come off the hook quite as easy.
And they stink more.
Yeah.
They have a much more pungent odor. And okay, disgusting fact number two of the day. Almost every creature on the planet prefers their meat a little rotten, including humans.
Yeah.
I mean, we call it hanging beef. Years ago, I mean, I can't stand this new age stuff. Grass-fed beef, that's like supposed to be the best thing ever. That means it's the cheapest junk you can buy. Grain-fed beef that's been hung and aged or a little decayed is way better. Grain fed's 200 times better, and it's staggering to me that people are being brainwashed into grass fed. Just means they didn't spend any money.
Right.
Going back into the sheephead baits, so they will eat live shrimp, and I prefer smaller ones because they don't have that big a mouth.
Right.
So a smaller, regular size shrimp will actually catch more. You'll get a lot more hits on the bigger shrimp, but you'll be missing pieces of your shrimp. You bring back the head, you bring back part of the tail, and they will have gotten the rest of it. So smaller live shrimp, peeled shrimp meat just on the hook, sand fleas, fiddler crabs, earthworms.
Earthworms. Well,
there's one more I'm forgetting. What did we just talk about? I forgot.
No, that's it. The crab, sand fleas, shrimp both ways. But the one thing you forgot to mention about the frozen shrimp, too, that you talked about years ago was taking a piece of that shell and sliding it on the barb of the hook after you've slid on the piece of meat to help kind of keep it from sliding off as easy.
Yeah, you can actually use a little piece of the shell as kind of a stopper to help keep the bait on so they don't pick it off quite so quickly.
And there is one artificial that does catch them with some regularity, but it's not like the king of baits by any means. But let's say you forgot your shrimp and you couldn't find any crabs or anything like that. Fish bites in the crab flavor or the bloodworm flavor.
Fish bites in the bloodworm. That's the only fake bait I know that you can keep in your tackle box and actually expect to keep sheephead with. Just to kind of wind down on the sheephead thing here, hitting good along the intercoastal waterways, up but not in the ICW channel, back up along the docks, under the piers, under the mangroves. Now, I would say on the east side of the harbor, there's a big oyster bed that's about four islands north of Pirate Harbor Channel. Behind, you go four islands north, then go behind that first set of islands. There's a big oyster bed there. Any news from there on the east side?
Not a whole lot. Most of it's been more out closer to the intercoastal.
So Bull Bay?
Yeah.
Now, there's several oyster beds, and there's the clam leases in Bull Bay. And just outside of Bull Bay, you've got clam leases there.
Plus, you've got those shacks inside Bull Bay with some of those deeper troughs with access to it.
Yep, you can fish the shacks inside or the clam lease outside.
Right.
Should be good on the sheephead. Getting down, how about Captiva rocks?
Captiva rocks has been producing a few, too. They've also been getting a few in Captiva Pass itself, just drifting along some of those guys that are looking for other oddities.
What's the name of that place that you fish inside of Boca Raton Pass?
Quarantine Rocks.
Quarantine Rocks. Now, what do you think? Sheephead there?
There should be, but when I was there 2 weeks ago, I didn't run into any, but the water temperature was quite a bit warmer then.
Okay.
Also, up inside Boca Grande, inside the bayou there in those canals, they're starting to pick some up, too, pretty good.
Well, that would be pretty much loaded with sheephead right about now.
I would think so.
The canals going in by the golf course there?
Yeah.
All right. Let's go. Just to give you a rundown, top five, sheephead number one, trout number two, three, snook, and number fours and fives would be lanes, mangroves, grunts, all sort of bottom fish out there. Getting number two, trout fishing. Speckled sea trout's doing really good as number two pick of the week.
Yes.
Any silver trout around? Heard of any silver trout?
I haven't heard of any. I have not heard of any. I haven't even heard of any sugar trout lately.
That's really weird with no sugar trout. Used to be tons of sugar trout around, lots of silver trout, and the numbers of them went way down. Now, they're a non-regulated species. Sea trout have a size and bag limit. Silver trout don't. So where's the sea trout hitting right now?
Almost the same areas as the sheep's head, to be honest with you. I mean, the water temperature drops just as those trout were starting to pick back up. That water temperature dumped so hard, so quick. I don't know why it changed things, because it should have made it better.
It should have made it a lot better.
But it didn't. Those fish moved out into like 4, 5, 6 feet of water. And they seem to have moved out a little bit closer to the intercoastal. They're still getting a few.
Pop quiz. What's your number one lure for sea trout? Subsurface, something below the water, and then your number one top water.
Subsurface, honestly, I'm gonna probably throw like a DOA shad tail.
You're gonna go with shad tail.
Yep.
I'm gonna go with tandem rig.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the tandem rigs, DOA deadly. No, it's the I don't know whatever, but you're throwing two jigs at once.
Yes.
Now, I think I beat you. No, I think I won. I won. I am the winner. The best. The one. The man. No. All right. So you were saying,
Robert. Some people
Robert,
recognize them as a love lure, but they don't make them anymore.
Okay.
So I'm just trying to help
you
out.
They have the love bug, which is a really bad copy of it.
Yep.
It doesn't work very well. The DOA has a tandem lure. And it's two curl tails tied to the same lead. When you buy them, you see there's a little loop of leader in there and a swivel. Tie your line to the swivel and throw them. But it's imperative. You have to, when you reel it in, cast it out, let it hit the water, count to one, start to reel, lift your rod tip, drop your rod tip. Reel slowly, lift your rod tip, lift your rod tip. You cannot work the rod to the side and expect to catch trout with it. The lures have to go, pretend like you've got two little fish, which is the curltails, being chased up out of the grass. Then, okay, I'm going to go back and hide in the grass. And they get chased out of the grass. Then they drop down going to hide in the grass.
Right.
And that's what makes them work, that chasing action. Now, you're all right with your lure. That was okay. What was it again, anyway? It was just, it was so bland, I don't even remember. Come on, Robert, pick my number two.
Doesn't matter. Yours was better.
Yeah, but what was your number two? Do you remember?
I didn't go with a number two yet.
You went with number one, but what was your number one?
The DOA shadtail.
The DOA shadtail is a very good choice because, but for trout, what's the action you give your DOA shadtail?
Same
it's
action.
It's the cowtail.
Same action. I'll lift it a couple, two or three times, then let it drop. Lift it a couple, two or three times, let it drop. All while reeling at the same time. I almost never pause on the reeling action.
The only bad part about this is, boys and girls, here's the rub, the fly in the ointment, the problem child with it. When you pick it up, it gets their attention because it looks like something startled them and they're running towards the surface. Then as you drop your rod tip, it makes your lure fall like the lure is running back to hide in the grass. That triggers the strike. So you're jigging along, reeling, jigging, jigging, reeling, jigging, jigging, fish on, and it's always a complete surprise because you come up to do your jig and the fish is hitting. Right. You don't feel them strike the baits because 99.9% of the time they hit it while the lure's falling, while you've got slack in your line. So you really got to pay attention the whole time. And if you're 15, 20 minutes and you haven't caught a fish, then all of a sudden you're just starting to get into the school, you almost always miss that first one because it's such a surprise.
Absolutely. It always catches you off guard because, like you said, a lot of fish will hit that bait when it's on its drop. You know, that's why pause is such a huge action on any lure, whether it's a hard bait or a soft plastic, because it's just, it gets fish interested.
It's that little roller coaster moment where it's sitting up the top and then all of a sudden it just creams down towards the bottom, and that's what makes the strike. Number one best place for trout, where would you say?
For the bigger trout, honestly, I'd probably be up in Lemon Bay.
That's what I've heard. I've heard Lemon Bay is doing really good.
Yeah.
Now, are they just scattered across the flats in Lemon Bay?
The bigger ones are. The bigger ones definitely are. And it seems like the bigger ones are still scattered just about everywhere, but some of those slot-sized fish, like in that, you know, 15 to 20-inch range, they're starting to school up a little bit more. But for those fish that are in that, like, 18 to 24-inch range, they become a little bit more solitary or hanging doubles.
I think because they try and eat the smaller fish, because if something's half as big as a trout, it will try and eat something half its size or smaller. And but now, Lemon Bay is a great place for them. I like the DOA Deadly combo up there. It's a popping cork with a shrimp down below it. I adjust the depth, tie the leader, so my shrimp is going to be about 4 inches off the bottom, pop, pop. Let it sit for a while, pop, pop. A lot of good fast-moving popping right now. You can be a little more active with your popping because the trout like this water. They like the temperature, so pop them a little bit more. Or do you think I'm wrong?
No, you're absolutely dead on with that.
When it was at the peak of the colder water, I would slow down and actually switch over to a different type of popping cork because one that takes longer to reset.
Yeah.
Because I pop too quick. With the DOA, I can do it immediately. You pop it, automatically resets, has a half ounce weight in it. But the ones with the metal bead, plastic beads,
right,
they require me to slow down and wait for it to reset. So as that water temp gets down around 60, I switch over to the Cajun Thunders and the other ones to get rid of the heavy weight that's in the DOA. Because otherwise I go too fast. No, but right now I can go back to the DOA and pop the way I want to pop.
Right, and I agree with you on that. My biggest problem with trout fishing is I tend to work stuff a little bit too quick in general. So I always got to remind myself on a regular basis to slow down.
Yeah, they got to get that stop in there. So Lemon Bay is your number one pick. I'm going to say, if I was going to go look for big trout right now, I would go through and out the backside of Bull Bay, just north of Bull Bay, around some of those islands, try and find yourself 3 feet of water, and I'm going to go with a top water back there. I'm going to put on the head and torpedo and just really give it a hard shot, keep my rod tip very low to the water, really pull it because I want that prop just to sling water up in the air. I'm going to have a secondary rod ready to go, so if I start seeing pops on it, because it's hard to get trout on a topwater. They're blind, dumb, and stupid. I mean, you see them hit the lure, but you've already moved it, and it's a foot forward, and bam, they're hitting where it was. Yeah. Not where it is, but where it was. So once you see them start to hit, then you can throw that tandem. You can throw an MR-17. You can throw all these other lures. If it doesn't catch trout, you should throw it away, really.
Well, and another thing that's been working, you know, and it's been around for years, but even Carl kind of reinvented it last year with the Devil's Horse, is run a teaser off the back. You know, you can hook a small piece of leader line of about 18 inches off the back with a small shad tail or a small curl tail on just a much lighter jig head. So when you get those short strikes, they'll still hit that. And it almost acts like a bobber at the same time.
A Smithwick Devil Horse is a little bit larger topwater lure. It's probably a little over 5 inches long. Has a propeller on the front and a propeller on the back. So leave all the hooks in place on your Devil's Horse. Tie a 20-pound or 25-pound test leader to the back eye for the propeller. Then go about, you're going to have to make it 12 to 18 inches long, a 16th-ounce jig head with a small curl tail on it. And as you pop your top water, that little curl tail jig is jumping in the water as well.
Right.
Great way to pick up trout.
Absolutely. And you'd be surprised with what redfish will do to it, too.
Now, just so, I've never tried to explain that before. Did you understand what I was talking about?
I never understand what you're talking about.
Never understood what I'm talking about. Were you able to get an idea what I was talking about?
Not even close.
So if you have a lure that stays on top and floats on the surface, and something like the Devil's Horse is a low propeller on the front, low propeller on the back, then you take your rod in a very quick action, jerk it so that it moves the lure forward anywhere from 6 to 18 inches, and the propellers slash the water, making the sound of a fish hitting a bait. You're not actually making the sound of a bait escaping the way you think you would. What you want to replicate is that a fish tried to eat that. That's the sound you want to make on the surface. Fish will come up to the surface, hitting the lure like they would if a minnow was swimming at the surface. So you get this big splash sound, slash sound. That's what you're recreating. But it's somehow very hard for fish, I think because light bends water, or the water bends light, they have a hard time connecting to the topwater lure. So what we're doing is putting a jig, a very light, small jig, off the back of the lure so that as you work the topwater, you're also working this little jig under the water. So they'll hit at the topwater lure, miss it, turn around and strike the little jig, and you caught your fish.
That sounds reasonable. Okay. I know if we're talking about trout, you know, they're one of the fish that have the active lateral line.
Yes.
Where they're hearing probably more than they're actually seeing because of that lateral line. You get a fish like a sheep's head where there's not much of a lateral line, not much is going on, but those fish are visual strikers. They see something and they go for it, where a trout hears it first. And so if you've moved it from where he's heard it, He's not going to hit it.
That was the best explanation. You moved it from where he heard it.
That's pretty darn impressive, actually. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's the first time in 30 years anybody's ever given me a realistic answer to that.
Wow, cool. Do I get a T-shirt or something like that?
I will bring you the T-shirt. I promise. You will have a Fish and Frank shirt.
That was actually really, really, really impressive.
Yeah. My God. Boy.
And you can add snook to that pile, too, because snook have a very active lateral line. They hear it long before they see it.
But snook have an unusually keen sense of vision and smell as well. So they hit topwaters, and they connect. Trout don't. And I think you're really hitting the mark with they hear better than they see, and that's why. Because that makes perfect sense. But snook have such good vision they actually will connect with a topwater lure. So, very cool. All right, sea trout, east side of the west side of the harbor. Robert, anything?
They've been around a little bit, but they're just not in great numbers by any stretch. A couple of guys have been saying they're catching a few, and one guy got excited because he actually did really good yesterday. But that was his first good day for trout up on the upper east side in quite some time. So I would say it's worth trying if you're on your way somewhere, on your way back. But I wouldn't try devoting the entire day looking for them up on the upper end of the harbor.
I got to tell you, on the east side, going around back behind the bar, and every time I've gone there, get very, very close to the sandbar on the inside of the bar. You're going to be on the open flat midway between the bar and the islands, and you may or may not catch some decent trout. Then you're going to move closer to the bar. You're going to go over a little hidden bar, and then there's a bit of a trough there. That's where those big trout are, and they've been there every time I've gone there. I don't keep trout because I don't really like them. My dad absolutely loves them, and I never tell him if I've released a trout because he yells at me. You know, because right. I was supposed to keep that trout and fillet it and give it to him. And I do that regularly, but not every one. And he wants all of them. And I just, you know, I don't want to do them all. So, but I found those big trout there pretty steady. They're in the backside of Bull Bay. Where would your best bet be for trout? If you were going to call it, you said Lemon Bay. Yeah. What about moving south? Any ideas good?
Moving south, I'd probably be right there around Captiva Rocks or the shacks right there in Captiva.
Okay. Number one bait for trout?
Shrimp.
Shrimp under a float? Shrimp free line?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
I'm going to try to cover all the bases because they are moving around because of the water temperature fluctuating so much in different areas. I'm going to try to be as diverse as possible.
Yeah, and I'm going to call the DOA deadly combo. Yes, I talk about DOA a lot. I don't get paid to do it. I don't get free product. I don't get money. I talk about what I want to talk about. I don't accept money from anybody to influence my opinions. I either like it or I don't, but you're not buying my opinion unless it's retirement money. And no one's idiot enough to give me millions for my opinion.
Right.
It's not worth that, but that's the only way you're ever buying my opinion. If I say the name of a product, like today I said DOA a lot, it's because I believe in it and I like it. And Mark Nichols, and it's 100% made in the USA. The package, the plastic, the fish, everything goes into DOA is right from here. I like the company. I can't say enough good things about them. But that is not paid, that's not free product, that is my personal opinion. Don't want you to think anything else. It doesn't happen with me. All right, going on, snook, number three fish of the week. Love snook fishing. What's going on with the snook?
Lots and lots of snook moving around, especially in Bull Bay and Turtle Bay. There's fish in pretty much most of the bushes and even under the shacks, and they're in little groups to just single fish. And they've really turned on to shrimp these last 2 weeks, essentially.
I'm a little disappointed. I went outside today, and it looks like they're going to take the tree out of my canal.
Yeah.
During Irma, we had a tree. It's about a 60-foot tree. It fell over, and it's been blocking the entire canal. And, you know, I have two lots. And my one boat, where I keep one of my boats, is on one end, and the other end I have a boat ramp. And what's nice, my boat ramp, I can get in and out with, right. You know, easy. And so it hasn't bothered me, but it's attracted a huge, there's been tilapia, there's been snook. I've had all these fish around that tree, and they went to pull it out today. I'm like, no, my tree is going to go. I mean, yes, it looks bad. There's this big tree laying all the way across the canal, but I'm going to miss my tree. I've been catching all kinds of cool fish right there. That's where Terry beat me the other night.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You were fishing with us.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I saw her picture actually made it in the paper with that fish.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. There's no way I'm putting the picture of the fish I've been catching lately in the paper.
Neither would
I. And I've been dropping the big ones. So, you know, literally Carl says, oh, you want the gripper? I'm like, nah, I got it. Pa-boom, splash, no pictures. All right, so no proof. Yeah. Snook fishing, how are the canals doing on snook? And I'm going to call Storm Twitch Stick number one snook lure still of this year, or did something else take over?
It's still number one.
Hands Storm down. Twitch is absolutely. Still number one.
The the canals are still doing pretty good. They were doing better last week, but it's gotten a little bit quieter this week. I don't know if it's tides, I don't know if it's water temperature, but they've slowed down just a little bit in some of the canals.
All right, RJ, we're going to pose this other question. When the cold front hit, the night of the cold front, remember it was stormy, it was cold, the snook went off, started hitting. And for the next week, they just hitting as the temperature got colder. Now it's warming up, they're backing off a little bit. Have you ever heard anything like that? Subtropical fish goes to sleep, starts to go dormant, starts to die when the water hits about 50. At 60 degrees, they can't hardly move. What's up with that? Robert?
I have no idea.
The only thing I know is as the water gets colder for certain fish, their digestive process slows down.
Absolutely.
They need, it just like a lizard or a snake, they need some heat to be able to digest their food. So, and snook are one of those fish that when the water temperature drops, they can't digest, so they don't eat. So they're not actually going dormant, they just don't eat.
Right.
No, they literally will. I have taken 40 plus, almost 50 inch snook, grabbed them by the lip, reached my hand down the water, grabbed them by the lip, moved them out, looked at them, and put them back in their little hiding spots around the dams along US 41 where the old spillways were.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those dams were crumbling. They had big rock barriers behind them. And when I mean dormant, they're literally, they can't move.
Well, they die at some point when you get down 48 degrees and they all go belly up. And we've had that a couple of times in the area over the years.
Oh, yeah, it used to be every year.
Yeah.
But people who weren't used to living here, and we have a big snook kill, they go, oh my gosh, it's the end of the world. And no, it's just the stupid snook. They were the lazy, stupid ones. They got in the habit of just going out in front of the mangroves, getting in a hole, and then going back to the mangroves. Instead of leaving the flats as the water left, they just do this little, okay, there'll be enough water, I can live here. Get a cold blast and they die. They're lazy and they're stupid. They deserve to die. Natural selection. We have much smarter snooks since that last cold spell.
That's right, yeah.
Because the lazy, dumb ones died. Now, these are a much better breed of fish. So, how's the snook fishing in the canals? Did I ask you that?
Yeah.
I got sidetracked.
It's okay. It's slowed down. I do have a weird story for you,
okay,
though. We always tell people to troll in and out of the canals, correct? Because you never know what you're going to hook into, and you're already just idling along anyways. Why not have a pole out?
Right.
So the other day we went to take out the FWC to go tag Goliath.
I didn't ask. That was one thing I was going to ask you about. But go ahead and do this, and then I want to talk to you about that.
So we were way in the back of PGI because we borrowed Barry's boat. And on our way out, trolling an X-Wrap, because I like the X-Wrap. It just always tracks good for me. I stick a fish. He starts to fight. Kind of heads towards one side of the canal to the other side of the canal. Never see the fish, and it's not doing the violent head shake like it's a big jack, but I can't figure it out. About a minute or so fighting it, all of a sudden it comes off. I'm like, really? Can I get broke off? And I start reeling, and I can tell that my lure is still there. I'm like, how does a fish stay on a hook for a solid minute with six hooks stuck in its face? And as I pull it out of the water, as I'm saying that, Carl starts laughing. He goes, because all the hooks are bent. And I look down, and all the hooks straightened out except for one hook.
You straighten the hooks on an X-Wrap?
Yeah, on an X-Wrap 10.
That's, I mean,
they're two extra strong or three extra strong.
Yeah, but I mean, that's hard to do with a pair of pliers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's double tough.
Five of the six barbs were straightened.
Oh, my God.
So I straighten them back out. We go another couple hundred yards down the canal. I'm getting it all straightened out and worked right. Throw it out. Lure's not even in the water 50 feet of idling time, and I get railed again. Fish starts screaming, it's dumping line head, and we're going right underneath Bass Inlet, actually. And that fish turns the corner to go under the bridge because we had already cleared the bridge when I cast it towards the bridge.
Right.
It starts screaming line. I'm setting the hook, trying to hold on to him. Then I say, okay, he's going to make it to the bridge. So I start to loosen up a little bit, and Carl's backing down. So I'm starting to point the rod at it, give it a little bit of less tension. All of a sudden, the line goes slack. I'm like, oh, he got me around the piling. Reel it back up. There's still some tension there. And I'm like, what the heck? Start get up, caught up to the line. The fish had dove down and got tangled up on something under the water down towards the bottom and then broke me off. So the line was still hung up on some debris underneath. But it did break me off. So two unknown fish totally destroyed me in 5 minutes. And that was the most excitement of the whole day because we did not catch one Goliath.
All right. Well, Robert helps with a lot of Sea Grant and FWC studies and all that, and you went out to go fishing for Goliath grouper to do tagging.
Right.
And you did not catch any.
No. But let's get this straight. It is baby.
Okay, I'm going to get this straight. Baby. I want to get this straight right now. Baby All right, boys Jewfish. And girls, back up. Listen up. We're going to get this straight.
Baby Jewfish. Baby Goliath grouper.
Now, why did we have to get this straight?
Because people will laugh because catching a Jewfish Goliath grouper is easy. Bigger Jewfish.
Oh, the big ones.
They're easy.
Okay.
They're easy to hook into. Not always easy to land, but they're easy to find and hook. The goal of this study is to... They want to try to get a life history of them, and they really don't know anything about the small ones, like how long do they stay in the upper rivers and how long do they stay in the canals before they move out.
Yeah.
You know, so they want fish that are preferably 10 pounds and smaller.
They were doing this study, and it was the dumbest thing FWC's ever done. They came around and said, should we provide people, let them catch a Goliath grouper with a tag? They were talking about 30 fish. They were going to charge $100 a tag. I said, why did you have to do a study with this? We're talking about 30 or maybe 100 fish. It was literally nothing. I mean, it was a ridiculous amount, would not do anything, change anything. I said, why didn't you just call up, you know, a few people, go out and take those few fish? It was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. What a waste of time and money. For whatever money they would have made charging $100 for the tag, they already lost on hotels and rooms to ask if they should do it. Only our government would spend more money than they're going to bring in asking should they do something.
Yeah.
It's absolutely stupid. Anyway, offshore, just to throw in a little bit about what's going on out there, I'm going to go along with you. I'm going to be trolling in a Rapala X-Rap 10 or Storm Twitch, as well as a dolphin getter, trolling feather, and then probably a stretch 15 or a Rapala 15 or a countdown 15. I'm going to be using mackerel colors, red and white, because we are in prime king mackerel temperatures right now.
Right.
We're 68 to 72 degrees, loaded up with king mackerel. What's going on out in the Gulf right now?
Mostly what I've been hearing about the last couple days have been the bottom fishing. The trolling fish, the guys are not seeing much yesterday. And I don't know if it was just a weird thing, but I've had three different gentlemen in today that were asking me what's up with the offshore, because last week they had great mackerel fishing, blackfin tuna, Spanish mackerel. I mean, they were killing it out there. One gentleman, he came in and he was just completely dumbfounded that he couldn't find any fish yesterday, but I asked him, did you see any birds? Did you see any bait, whether you saw it on the surface or on your bottom machine? And he said, no, I didn't see anything. The only reports I've been getting about that has been more north, actually, like Inglewood and Venice.
You got to go a little bit north.
Yeah, the guys up there are finding bait. They're finding the king mackerel and the Spanish mackerel. Down here, not so much.
What about Mary's, Helen's, Power Poles, Novak, any of those, Palm Island Ferry, anything out there going
on? Bottom fishing is ridiculous. I mean, the lane
snapper. So it's really bad?
Yeah, really bad.
Well, I don't know. You said ridiculous. What is that? Does that mean good or bad?
Ridiculously good.
Oh, ridiculously good. I just wanted to clarify. You know, I don't speak, Robert. You know, you got to, you know,
20 years, me. You should have it kind of figured out.
Yeah. Go ahead. So anyway, how's the bottom fishing out there, Robert? This is ridiculous.
Lane snapper, mangrove snapper, and lane snapper like 15, 16 inches. You know, 2 pounders, 2.5, 3 pounders.
And they're the most wonderful eating of all.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of sheep's head, some good grunts, quite a few porgies, a lot of small baby grouper.
So you're talking about anything within the 3 to 15 mile range.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely amazing. And you don't need giant tackle for these guys. Okay, you're going to hook into maybe a legal size grouper that might rail you on that lighter tackle. Or a Goliath is going to eat your snapper as you're reeling it up and wreck you. He's going to wreck you on a big rod anyway. But for the grocery shopping or just taking out a family member who's not a great avid fisherman or a child who you want to introduce into fishing, it's nonstop action out there right now. It's
squid been or really, shrimp?
Both.
Both.
Both have been working really well.
I like how he makes a decision.
No, you know as well as I do. Squid works phenomenal offshore, better than inshore.
Yeah, I like squid on the in the Gulf side. What I do is I take a little piece of squid. I'll take the squid, and I'll cut it into pieces, cut it again, so I have little strips of squid. I put that on the hook, then I put a live shrimp on, drop it down. If they happen to get the shrimp off, don't reel it up right away. You feel that pop, 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 little peck, you know, hitting the shrimp. And then all of a sudden it stops. Give it a minute, keep it there, because they did not get the squid. It did not pull off the hook. They will come back, nail that squid, and you got them. So it's my backup plan to that.
Yeah, exactly.
So squid on first, then a live shrimp on. You'll catch a whole bunch of them. There is so many different types of fish you can go to out there. You don't need the real big heavy tackle, maybe a little better than your inshore tackle. Your inshore tackle will work, but you stand a good chance of breaking it. One of the things, two types of fishing, one's out in front of you and one's straight down. And it's that straight down fishing that can be very hard on flats tackle. It's made for fish that are out in front of you, bringing them to you, not so much for bringing them up from the depth. But you can still have a good time with a 4,000 reel out there and a 10 to 20 medium heavy rod, 20-pound braid.
Absolutely. Just be careful not to lift your rod up too high. You got to keep an eye on your line to make sure your line doesn't start to come back towards the rod itself.
Yeah, keep your rod.
If that fish goes under the boat.
From 11 o'clock down.
Lifting-wise, but you still got to pay attention to the line too, because even if you're holding the rod straight out in front of you, if that fish goes under the boat, now you're holding that rod at 11 o'clock technically where you could fold the rod over on itself. So you want to make sure that the line is straight off the tip or going away from the tip, not coming towards the tip or towards your reel when you're lifting up on those fish.
Making sure the line is either going straight or away from you, but never towards the handle of the rod.
Correct.
Okay.
The other thing that's been out there too.
Well, hang on. I'm going to jump to the other page.
Gotcha.
We do have a little bit of red tide. You're going to hear about it. The Peace River is at a little over 2 feet right now in Arcadia, which means there's very little water flowing at us, about 286 cubic feet a second, which is enough to dull the red tide, but not enough to completely kill it. As it stands right now, the only thing that does kill red tide is fresh water. So the water coming down the river on the outgoing tides is just enough to keep it at low to background concentrations. So we are having some red tide issues. Nothing bad that I've heard about. Robert, what are you hearing bad?
Honestly, the bad part is that the few guys that are finding bait that are cutting across the harbor, their bait's dying off. Or the guy who's trying to keep his redfish alive because he didn't bring ice with him and crosses the harbor, redfish is dying in the live well.
So if you're going from the east side of the harbor to the west side, you have a very good chance of running into some red tide in the middle of the harbor. We're not hearing about it on the east side, west side. What about Bull Turtle Bay?
No, nothing up inside there. People are seeing dead fish, but honestly, the majority of the photographs that I've seen, the vast majority of it has been mullet. There has been a couple of snook. There has been a couple of trout around. Not saying that it's netters. It could be incidental red tide.
Yeah, I'm going to say there's a lot to do with the netting out there, because a bunch of mullet and a couple of snook and redfish dying, that sounds like as much like a commercial netting as it does red tide. So we're going to give that a pass. It could be one or the other.
Yeah, but don't panic because, you know, like you said, it's very low-level concentrations. Most of the guys are not smelling it. Most of them aren't feeling it. A couple of guys have said they
smelled it. That's what makes it difficult.
Yeah.
Because it's not tickling the back of your throat. You're not coughing. You're not irritated. But all of a sudden, your stuff starts to die. And you're like, dang. And don't catch and release in red tide. If it's red tide and you're going to get your dinner, that's fine, because red tide does not poison the fish, it suffocates them.
Right.
Big difference. You don't go around picking up dead floating fish because, well, that would be stupid. But if you've got a fish fights his way in, you cannot release him in a low oxygen level environment like red tide and have any expectations he's going to live. So if you're going to go out to catch and release and you do, okay, there's red tide here, either decide you're going to eat those fish or move on to somewhere where there is no red tide. It's not right to do catch and release and red tide because that's catch and kill. And we don't do that unless you're going to eat the fish.
Right.
All right, Triple Tail. What's going on, Triple Tail? Got some time, a little bit of time for some more good news. I want a good news fish.
Triple Tail. Kirk, Triple Tail. Officer Kirk and Officer Ryan went out yesterday off of Venice. They got a couple dozen Triple Tail, saw a lot of Triple Tail, but they got a 14-pounder, two 10-pounders, and a 9-pounder that they decided to keep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and they saw some bigger fish that wouldn't cooperate. They saw quite a few bigger fish, and they went both north and south of Venice, and they saw fish everywhere they went.
Yeah, a lot of Triple Tail out there
plus
right now.
Plus the stories I'm hearing from Sanibel up to here, same thing. Lots of small fish around, so, you know, you just got to hunt and peck for them and look for some of your bigger ones and see what's going on out there and just run the buoys and throw a shrimp at them. They caught all theirs on shrimp yesterday.
All right. What we're talking about is going out looking for Triple Tail. You do need a boat to do this. You're not going to be able to do it from land. But it's really very difficult but remarkably simple. I go out into the Gulf, and I'm looking for crab trap buoys or literally anything floating. Now, number one trick, you want the sun at your back. You cannot look into the sun. You're just going to see the sun on the water. The sun has to be at your back. Get your boat up on a plane, and then bring the throttle back.
Onto a plane?
Yeah, I go on plane. What?
You said bring it onto a plane.
I bring boat onto a plane. It makes it a lot easier because you take the plane and you fly over the stuff. You can see them better. And then you just have the plane release you and you drop into the water.
Right.
Motor full throttle, so you take right off. James Bond, you know?
There you go.
Get up on plane. Bring your throttle back as much as possible so you maintain on plane but are going as slow as you can. Now, go along making sure if the sun's on your left, you have the buoys are on your right. So you're going along, you're looking at the buoy, trying to see down the rope. You are not looking for a fish when you're looking for Triple Tail. You're looking for a dirty old rag that appears to be hanging off of the rope or the buoy. It almost never does a Triple Tail appear like a fish hanging around by that rope. It almost always looks like a dirty old rag covered with oil. It's just ridiculous. But that's what you're looking for. You drive along, and when you see them, don't stop the boat, but figure out what buoy that is, because, you know, there's often, you know, 10 buoys within sight of you. Slowly turn the boat out away from the buoy. Go upwind. Whichever way the wind is blowing, you want to get upwind from it and then slowly ease the throttle down like you're going off into the distance. Once you get stopped, I'll drift up with the wind. I put a trolling motor in, and I'm freelining a shrimp. Now, Robert, you ever use bobbers?
Yeah.
So I'm going to say freeline number one, a bait fish or a small shrimp under a bobber number two.
Yeah.
So which is your favorite way to do it?
It depends on the wind and the size of my shrimp.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the bobber makes it really, really nice if there's a little bit of a breeze or you've got a smaller shrimp, so you can be able to make that little bit of a distance of a cast, because sometimes as you're drifting, you can sometimes get two or three shots at that fish if you cast it wrong. You know, so
right.
It gives me a little bit better visual using a bobber personally to see that I either overcast it or shortcast it so I can reel back in and get another shot at it, versus if I freeline that shrimp, I a lot of times can't tell, and hopefully the person on the boat can tell if I short cast it or long cast it.
But you're blind.
Well, I know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't hear well, but you don't see it all. I mean, you can't see hardly at all.
So it helps to get multiple casts and to follow the direction.
I always start casting quite a ways away because I want to try and get to my bait on that buoy before the boat gets as close. So right. I'll be casting when I'm short casting and not even within 10 or 15 feet, reel up and just keep casting at it. Now, it is Christmas time, boys and girls. Merry Christmas to you. Happy Christmas and all that. Are we going to be here live or are we going to record next week?
Recorded show next week.
So this is Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Correctamundo.
correct the motto. All right.
I like it.
Robert, you want a Christmas message for anybody?
I just would love to tell everyone out there, thank you for supporting us, and enjoy your family and enjoy the holidays and be safe and come into Frank's.
Family's a little better when you enjoy them with a little mustard over a slow fire.
There you go.
All right.
I like it.
So,
just enjoy everybody and have a good time. And if you happen to get any new fishing toys, stop in the shop. We'll be there all through Christmas. And
Christmas Day, we're up, what, 9 to 4 or 9 to 3?
9 to 3
on Christmas Day, we'll
Unless
be there.
Unless we're really out of bait and everyone's cranky, then we're going home early.
Yeah. So 9 to 3 on Christmas Day, we're going to be at Fish and Frank's. The reason is it's not fair to ask you guys to make special trips and buy all your stuff. Then you have all the new toys Christmas morning. You want to get out and use them. We will be there with bait and any help you need. And I know we've got a lot of Christmas gifts to exchange because a lot of stuff didn't come in. We've got exchange gifts out there. This is Fish and Frank. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I hope you had a great Hanukkah. And Happy New Year, boys and girls. And we will see you in 2018. This is Fish and Frank, and that's Robert there in the chair, and our producer, RJ. From all of us, thank you, and have a happy holiday and Happy New Year.
Weather is hot, weather it's cool. Oh, what a spot for